Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda in South Pasadena, and I have my awesome co-host on the other line in beautiful Arkansas, Carrie Waller. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm tired. I'm really tired.
Like, what were you doing during volleyball last night after a workshop? Two workshops.
I have to cheer on my children and their team. So my husband and I drove 2.5 hours out to Riverside in traffic after teaching a workshop for a full day to cheer on UC Irvine. Unfortunately, we didn't cheer hard enough. But I have to say that it's been a really busy week, and 100% of the credit, the idea, and all of the research for this show goes to Carrie. So, Carrie, you are currently my favorite AHA co-host. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. I know. I saw your schedule, and I thought, I can help out.
Well, you always help out. Don't get me wrong, but I really appreciate it. It has been a busy week, and it's actually kind of been a busy 16 days. many of you know there's this little challenge out there that I started, and it's been amazing. I said in my blog post last night, I feel like I'm painting in my studio with 250 other artists. And that's kind of a cool thing, but it's a 30 paintings in 30 day challenge. And today is day number 16, and I posted my number 16 painting last night at midnight. So it's on there for today, and this is amazing.
And the momentum seems to be staying. It seems like everybody is so excited and painting away, so that's really great. And well, you said that you can jump in right now, right, even if you haven't.
Oh, of course. I had some of my students who said, gosh, we wish we'd have known about it. I said, hey, it's not too late. Jump in now. It's not about keeping track of who painted 30 days in a row and who didn't. It's about getting yourself in your studio or in your kitchen, wherever you may paint, and painting every day. And so all of the benefits that come from that, the familiarity, getting through all those kind of mental blocks that we have about painting, kind of getting your strokes back, trying some different, inspirations to paint. If you paint already every day, kind of having a goal, and all those are the reasons for doing this. It's not about who did 30 days and who didn't. Although being in charge of it, I know I have to do 30. But I've already noticed a difference, and so I have to say it's been awesome. I don't know what's going to happen in February. I'm kind of sad.
Maybe people will just keep it up and keep posting on Facebook.
And they might end up like Lisa Daria, who was our guest last week, who is like on her 1,400th day in a row. And that was an amazing interview, I have to say. If you missed it, go back and listen to it. Although, can I mention we had 9,510 people that listened to AHA last week. So that is amazing.
That is amazing.
It's kind of wild, but she is incredible. When I asked her the question, what do you do? I mean, you must post in advance because of your schedule. I never in a million years would have thought that she was going to say, no, in 4 years, I've painted every single morning. I was shocked, dumbstruck.
I know, really think about that. We take vacations, we have sick days. I mean, she has done it no matter what.
I have every excuse in the world not to paint, and that's exactly what they are, excuses. So I don't know. I thought it was crazy. So it's I was so impressed, and I think a lot of people are inspired by her. I did not take her advice and wake up at 5 o'clock every morning to paint. I have not done that yet. I'm not sure I will. I think even if I painted at 8 o'clock, that would be good. But you're a night painter, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. That will never happen unless I stay up until 5. That's just totally. I can't get even if I attempt to start in the morning, mm-hmm. I don't get creative until like 4 in the afternoon, which is always a problem because dinner is right there, you know? It's always like
That's amazing because I shut down at night. I know Dreama paints at night a lot late, and I just, I can't. I'm not very creative. So if I ever teach a workshop at night, don't take it from me.
I just say I'm on European time. I don't get it.
Oh, good for you. No, I just taught a 3-day workshop. It was, I have to say, it was amazing. So I had 8 artists. All of them happened to be women. Oddly enough, they were all from California. That hasn't happened in a long time. Usually I've got someone coming from out of state. One gal, who's actually a friend of mine, had never painted. And these 8 artists painted some paintings that you would not believe. They were amazing. I posted them on Facebook and they're on my blog. We were in the class for 3 days. Everyone painted 4 paintings. I think 2 artists finished 7 paintings.
Wow.
I mean, can you believe that? They were so proficient and inspired. 3 of them signed up for another workshop. So it was really amazing. We had such a great time. I cooked a dinner for them on Tuesday night, which was fun. And we drank a bunch of wine. So it makes Wednesday morning
still,
a little harder.
And they still did 7 paintings?
I know. One gal yesterday painted 3 paintings.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Yeah. I was watching. I love the pears and, of course, your boats. I love them all.
Well, you're very kind.
They were so beautiful. I love the colors you were using, too. And your color sheet, you just have some really great things in your workshop.
Well, it's, I've been to enough workshops that when I first started teaching, I sat down and thought, what do I like and what do I not like? And I've kind of molded them accordingly. And you're doing some teaching now, too, aren't you, Carrie?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned it. I've had some inquiries. I have a workshop coming up in March. It's March 15th, 16th, and 17th. It's a weekend, and for me, it's right before my boys' spring break. But it's in Mount Vernon, Illinois, which is in southern Illinois, but it's about an hour and a half from St. Louis. And it's in Cedarhurst Art Center, which is a great, beautiful area. They have a wonderful museum on the property, and they put me up in the house on the property, so it's really a neat deal. But so it's 3 days, and I'll be teaching watercolor techniques. It's for anybody beginning to advance. You're learning values and colors, and I'm going to show how my techniques and how I paint and how I achieve glass and, you know, very detailed still life paintings. So it's a great time, and just email me or check out my website, and I'll get the information to you. It's CarrieWallerFineArt.com. It's CarrieWaller. But I will get you the information. They're doing a flyer right now for me, so I will forward it on to you if you're interested.
Well, I have to say, to be able to even remotely learn how to paint glass like you do would be a lifetime goal of mine. I'm just saying it right now.
My last group did a great job. I mean, we did ball jars, and I'm trying to figure out this time what I'm going to do, because I'm doing these green bottles right now, so I'm like, maybe I should incorporate one of those. But, it's kind of just teaching yourself how to see. And so, you know, a lot of things you can take away. I think every workshop you take away something, and you learn from other people, and it's just a great time.
Well, I think if you are a watercolor artist or remotely interested, you need to look into taking this workshop with Carrie, because if you guys haven't seen her art, I showed it to my whole class yesterday on my iPad. You guys, and they're like, that's not a painting. It can't be. I'm like, yes. Look at the ball jars one, and look at the Pellegrino bottles, and look and the one that you just put on the front of your, I can't remember if it's your blog or your website, the summer one that you just finished. They were like, unbelievable. So you're good, my dear. And I love the fact that you're always so surprised when you enter a competition and like win the grand prize, because I always know you will anyway. So
well, thank you. But you know, those judges can be a tricky area.
They can. No, I do know
thrilled.
That. I do know that. Well, today's show is, it's kind of a funny title. It's How to Become an Art Entrepreneur, because I think as artists, we are kind of entrepreneurs. But I do know that I am an entrepreneur. I think that way. I've always wanted to think that way. And it's just something that as an artist, I think you really need to do, because we need to be creative. We need to kind of think a little outside the box and be willing to take some risks and try some different things. I mean, it's a tough world out there, but I tell you, if you are creative and you kind of have that entrepreneurial spirit, you can be incredibly successful. So, you know, whether you're already selling your work or you're thinking about taking the plunge to sell your work, you are an entrepreneur, whether you know it or not. And by definition, just so you know what an entrepreneur is, it's the owner or manager of a business enterprise who, by risk and initiative, attempts to make profits. So it's really just about kind of thinking outside the box and being a little different and trying some new things. So this is going to be a fun show. We're going to talk about a lot of different ways, and Carrie, you can explain a little bit about where all this information came from and how you put it together.
I was super excited about the show. Of course, I came up with it, but I was really excited because I saw a couple months ago, Forbes magazine put out tips from 18 successful tips from these successful entrepreneurs, and I thought, how great, because everybody needs to learn these. Because, and I hear a lot of times artists will say, well, I'm just doing it to paint, or it's my hobby, and that's fine if that's how you're doing it. But if you're wanting to sell, which there's a lot of people that say, I want to be in a gallery, or I want to sell on Daily Paintworks, if you're doing those things, you'll have entered into the world of a business, and that is being an entrepreneur. And admitting it, I think, is half of the battle, because just realize that you are a business. And that's one thing, I think, once you decide that, then you're a little, you know, you're ready to start making some of these decisions and treating it as a business. So anyway, a lot of these came from Forbes. I have tweaked them and changed some of the things because we're artists, and, you know, some of these were other kind of companies. But that's where a lot of the topics and the idea came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, too, that, I mean, I talk to a lot of artists about their business. We talk about a ton of marketing in my workshops. I communicate with artists that are taking the webinars class, and, of course, I do consultations. So there is kind of that fine line between being an artist and selling your work and being an entrepreneur. And it really is about pushing yourself and looking at things differently. What I do all the time is I try to make connections. And it is so important because, I mean, I have really good friends who say, oh, wow, you're an artist. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? They didn't know that I've been painting now, and I've been a full-time artist for only 3 years, but still. So one of the key things you have to do, and for some artists out there listening to this show, they're thinking, Leslie, you're crazy because I'm an introvert and I don't want to be talking to people and I just want to paint. But you really have to network. You have to make connections, and you have to keep a record on every person that you meet. And I know it sounds silly, but if you did that from day one, you would have so many people in your contact list. And one thing that's kind of nice about selling online is if you don't enjoy going out and talking and meeting people, you can kind of do it behind your computer. I mean, I know that sounds kind of funny, but you could definitely still meet people through inquiries, through blog comments that they make. And even those people are people that you need to connect with and make sure that you network. So there's a lot of different ways you can do it. It doesn't necessarily mean going out and meeting people face-to-face. I think it's really a combination of both, especially nowadays with what's happening with Facebook. So when you meet connections, you need to ask people for their advice and help, and you need to keep in touch with them along the way and kind of build your network even before you need it. So if you're just painting right now and thinking, I'm never going to sell, well, that could change. So why not think about kind of getting out there and getting to know as many people as you can?
Right, and anyone can fall in that category, so you just have to realize any person that you have ever met in your life is a connection.
Mm-hmm. And potential client.
Exactly. Or have friends that could be potential clients, as we see through Facebook.
And I think we overlook that. I think that statement is so powerful, Carrie. I really do. I think we overlook the fact that every person we connect with and their friends, as you said, could be a potential client, whether they could take a workshop from you, whether they could buy your art. I mean, who knows?
I mean, I have a perfect example. I have two commissions I'm working at right now. One is my third grade teacher, and one is a high school teacher. And I've reconnected through Facebook with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I met one of them when I was 8 years old. I'm not kidding when I say anybody is a potential, you know, is a connection. And like you said, a potential collector. And you don't have to look at it callously, but it's the truth. I mean, anybody you know is a contact. And you know, you can brainstorm and just think about, you know, everybody at church, everybody at, you know, at the school, anybody. And also one easy way, like you said, for those people that are just like, I'm not forward, on your blog, almost every one of us has a blog. You can have the feed burner tool at the bottom where you can sign up for my email through this, and you have the feed burner widget. And that collects a list of email addresses for you. And so that's a very easy place, you know, to get email, you know, email addresses. But, you know,
if you're on Blogger, you go to the layout page, you go to the little add a gadget, and you click on that, and you have a bunch of options. One of those options is called sign up or something about signing up for my mailing list. You can put that on there. Boom, it's done. So simple. Right. And it's something that everybody needs to do. So I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
Sorry.
I think I was at the end of my...
So here's the thing about maintaining contacts. It's as important as making them. So you meet all these people over a year. If you never contact them again, that's kind of a mistake. So I think, Carrie, it really gets down to figuring out a system in order to kind of keep track of all these people. And you can do it a lot of ways. You can have a Rolodex, an old-fashioned Rolodex that literally has those little white cards and you flip through it, and you can put people's names on there. I think you should do it electronically because I think every time you meet someone, if you entered in their name and you entered in their email address, then you're so far ahead of the game. I mean, it makes a huge, huge difference. So you can do that through Constant Contact or MailChimp. And with MailChimp, you can sign up for free. And anytime you meet anyone, you can ask them, hey, can I put you on my mailing list? And they'll probably say yes. Right. And if you just start kind of remembering to ask that question, then you can add them on your mailing list. They'll get a confirmation, they'll agree, and boom. And the next thing you know, you could have hundreds of people on your list. So it's really important that you kind of organize your contacts and take the initiative now. It's January, it's the beginning of the year. I do a terrible job. I never add people onto my mailing list unless they sign up on their own. And if I do an art show, I have little cards that people can fill out. But I need to do a better job, much better job.
Yeah, and I love the idea of the digital, of course. I think that's important. But I also am old school, and I have two address books. I have, like, my family in one and all my art contacts in one, and some of those blend. And I just keep it that way. And it's great because I have a mailing tub, a little Tupperware tub. It's for mailing. I have it labeled mailing. Mm-hmm. And inside of it, I keep my address book. So I am constantly on the go with my kids. And so I have a painting I've got to ship out. I may not have the address or whatever. I know it's in that address book. It's thrown in that tub. I just grab my whole tub, which has, like, scissors and tape and everything you need for mailing and directions included. And I have it all with me. And, you know, yes, I could do this and have it on my phone, which would make a lot of sense, too. But I just haven't done it yet. But, you know, whatever you have to do to have this record is important.
It's true. And if having it electronic is going to prevent you from doing it, then don't do it electronic.
Right.
That's
what I'm saying. What works?
You kind of need both. You kind of need the bucket of where the non-electronic addresses go that eventually you hope you'll put into your emailing list. So,
right. Yes.
I agree.
And keep it, because I'm horrible about the post-it notes everywhere. You know, if you have a container, just throw them, make sure they all end up in the mailing, you know, whatever container, the address container,
mm-hmm.
keep them all in there. But I had seen an episode of House Hunters, and it had stuck with me for years. There was a guy that worked on Capitol Hill, and he talked about he kept an index card system, and anybody he came in contact with, he would have their name, their address, you know, any information he could have, including, like, their birthday, their children's birthday, their spouse's name, and then he, you know, could use that information anytime he had a social situation. Anytime he was ready to mail out Christmas cards or whatever, you could have the spouse, kids, and, you know, whatever, or you can do a birthday card. I think those are all, you know, great things, and people are always really impressed if you remember that kind of information.
No, I completely agree. And the other thing, too, is, you know, we talk about how important connections are. You need to be able to talk to these people that you meet and tell them about your art. And it's so funny, 2 days ago in my workshop, I was talking about the elevator speech, and probably almost 3 years ago, Dreema and I did a show talking about this. And the elevator speech is kind of that little 1 minute, 3 minute thing that you say to people who ask you what you do. And you need to not say, well, I'm an artist and that. And if you don't kind of have it down, then you're not going to be as clear and concise as you need to be. So, Carrie, what's yours? What's your elevator speech, if you will?
Well, I have gone back and forth because I have my mission statement kind of thing on my website, but it sounds weird for me to say, I am a watercolor artist that paints bold, and, you know. So
I agree. I totally get it. But what, or even what's your written elevator speech, if that's easier.
Right. So I think the way I really do it in person, I probably need to polish this up, but I'll tell people I paint in watercolor, but it's really a lot different than when you think of watercolor. So you really should see my work so you can see. And then that way it opens up to, I can show them my website, I can hand my business card to them, and then they see it and there's some interaction. So it may not be the most polished, but I'm still trying to figure out the balance of how to say it without sounding, awkward.
Mine is really basic. Now, my website says I'm an award-winning artist. Okay, I'm not going to say that myself, duh. But I'm going to say I'm an artist that paints fresh and colorful paintings using only a palette knife. It's one sentence. Hello? How hard is that?
Yeah.
And that one kind of statement is plastered everywhere. And I say it in conversation, too. Because it's simple, it's easy, it's true. And you kind of have to look at your website, look at what you're doing, look at your art, get with a couple other artists, go out to lunch and say, okay, guys, we're going to come up with our one-sentence little tagline. And then from there, we're going to develop our elevator speech. And you guys could probably do it for each other. You could do it online. Do it on Facebook.
Right.
Post, hey, I need a tagline or an elevator speech. You know me. What do you think it should be? And get other people's input.
That's a great idea.
So it's something that's really important. And you know what it does? It makes connecting with other people so much easier if you know in the back of your mind, I know what I'm going to say. Ha, ha, ha. The other thing I do is I don't like to be obnoxious and pushy about it. I'd much rather have somebody ask me. And it gets down to that old premise of my motto, which is it's not about telling others about your art. It's giving them a reason to ask about it. And that's my that's me. And I do talk a lot about my art, but I really try to get people to ask about it first.
Yeah.
So it's I just think it's more interesting that way. I think it makes a huge difference. So, but if you think about making connections online, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, there are Google+. There are so many ways to do it. So don't be afraid to reach out to people. You know, your favorite artists, people you admire, other artists that paint the way you do. Think outside the box. I have been fortunate enough to network with boat owners. I've gotten to know some people who live in some luxury vacation areas, and I know that that's a place where my art will appeal to. So think about where maybe your potential clients are. It's kind of that entrepreneurial spirit that you can have fun while you're doing it.
That is true. And on to our second big tip for how to be an entrepreneur is you need to focus, focus, and focus. You can take this in a lot of ways. Maybe you're going to focus on creating a body of work that you consider a collection this year. What is your marketing focus? You need to think about, how are you going to market your work once you've got this collection done. You need to make a plan, whether it's week by week or month by month, and decide what you're going to focus on. Take all of those ideas that you've had floating around in your head and get them on paper and decide, what is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some organization and focus can make all the difference in having a successful business. And, one of the examples I thought is when you go to the grocery store, do you just walk in aimlessly and walk down every aisle saying, what am I going to buy? It's going to take you a lot longer and you're going to spend a lot more money than if you would have had made a list and go in there with your list and buy those groceries. So, just focus and get it down on paper.
It's really true. And I talk to a lot of artists when I do my consultations they don't know how to put their websites together because they're doing watercolor and they're doing pastel and they're doing oil and they're doing mosaic and they're doing mixed media. And that's fine, but you got to be really careful when it comes to this focus, focus, focus of not spreading yourself too thin. And it may make sense for a lot of artists to kind of narrow down your focus. And if you can pull it off and do all four, more power to you. But I have a hard enough time just focusing on oil painting. So it's really important to understand that if you focus in one very directed arena and study that way, get to know other artists that way, paint with other artists in that medium, there's a very good chance that you're going to grow as an artist at a quicker pace than if you're trying to do a lot of different things. So it's really, really important to know that you have to perfect your craft. And to do that, you just have to be focused. It's very, very straightforward.
Right. And one of our third things is not something we all like to talk about, but we will fail at times. And when you have failures along the way, those are prime opportunities for learning. If you go through life afraid to make a mistake, you're going to spend most of your life not doing anything at all. There is no harm in making mistakes. It's essential to our growth. And the more responsibility you take on, the more likely you are going to make mistakes. I mean, we're all forging our own path here. This is, you know, we're doing it, most of us, by ourselves. So, of course, there's going to be some error. And you just have to realize that it's okay.
It is okay. And you know what? From your own mistakes, you gain wisdom and accelerate self-improvement. And I mean, I think about how boring it would be if I didn't try to push myself out of the box and do crazy things like saying I'm going to paint 30 paintings in 30 days when I painted like three in the entire month of December. I mean, really? But if you don't do those kind of things, then you're going to grow at a much slower pace. So, you know, mistakes because of the way their relationship is with risk-taking are essential to success. And so with mistakes, they're going to be a great stepping stone, and you're going to have, you know, I think a better outlook on your art career. And so often a failure, and this is really important, they're kind of showing you that maybe you're not on the right track. So if something you're really excited about, you do and it doesn't work. I mean, say you put a huge body of work for this big show. You've reached outside of your box. You've painted the crazy. You do the show and nothing sells. I mean, that a lot of people would consider a failure. I don't think it is even a failure to begin with. I think it's amazing that you tried something. But what you have to do is you've got to look at those quote-unquote failures and think, okay, what can I learn from this? Do I need to learn that perhaps this wasn't the right venue for me? Perhaps the marketing side of it was the problem. Perhaps not enough people saw the art. Maybe this art was pushing myself too far outside of the box. Who knows? But maybe it opened a window, and what you did, you enjoyed, and you wanted to do something a little bit different, a smaller size, a larger. I mean, who knows? You have to kind of look at. Go ahead.
Maybe you're just in the wrong venue.
Exactly. And that half the time, that's it. You know, and so make a list of reasons of what happened, maybe what didn't exceed, and if you could do it differently next time around, what would it be? And the other thing is, too, is I think people look at this and say, oh, it's a failure. And then 3 months later, someone calls them who saw their art at that show, and there are successes. So don't be too quick to turn something into a failure. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with that, because my first holiday show I ever did didn't sell a thing. I mean, I sold like some note cards and prints, and I didn't sell any originals. But for the next, you know, about 3 months later, I started getting people buying art that they'd seen at the fair or commissioning things. So, yeah, you're right. Don't jump too quickly to say, oh, that was a total waste of time and a failure.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. I completely agree.
And I have a couple of examples of some people that I thought could be inspirational that have, you know, had some bumps in the road but still became successful. And the first one was Vincent van Gogh. He only sold one painting in his entire life to a friend. And despite that, he kept painting and finished over 800 pieces. And now everyone wants to buy them, and his most expensive painting is valued at $142 million. So, I mean, come on. And then Walt Disney, the man who gave us Disney World and Mickey Mouse, his first animation company went bankrupt. He was fired by his news editors because he lacked imagination, and legend has it he was turned down 302 times before he got financing for Disney World. And then Dr. Seuss, he gave us The Cat in the Hat and The Green Eggs and Ham, books every child reads. At first, many didn't think he would succeed, and 27 different publishers rejected his first book. So, I mean, these are just examples. You just got to persevere and, you know, figure it out.
Yeah, and so, you know, even if we could not use the word failure, we have to be honest that there have been times where we've hit those hurdles and things didn't go the way we planned. But you know what? You got to learn from them. And that's the entrepreneurial spirit, is saying, darn, that really kind of did not work well. Okay, we need to move on, but let's stop and think, okay, what did we learn? What good did come from it? And I guarantee you there's something. Absolutely. So it's really important to have that outlook. So the fourth thing you need to do is let your passion drive you. And this is so true for every artist. You need to understand what you're passionate about and go for it head on. And passion is absolutely what drives you in your entrepreneurial journey. And so, you know, do you know what your passion is? And it's just figuring out probably that it's art. And there's so many of us that kind of took a crooked, distorted path to get to that direction. And once you find it, it's amazing. And I have to say, this show has been kind of my prime example. I mean, it started as a way for a bunch of artist friends to get together on a phone call, and it's turned into much, much more. But I've been so passionate about this now for almost 3 years, which is hard to believe, that I'm thrilled that it's kind of gone the way it has. So find your passion and please, please, please take advantage of it and go down that path.
Right. I have another artist friend that she does great paintings, but her sketches would pop up and they were amazing. And she is now doing, she had these creative sketches, so she's now started doing workshops based on creative sketching. Not everybody can do that, and not everybody thinks that way. So she has figured out, you know, that this is a good niche for her, and she's, you know, going with it. So just really, you know, what ignites you, what do you truly believe in, you know, and go with it.
I think that's wonderful. The fifth, I guess, topic here is to write a business plan. And this is where all the artists listening are going to go, like, make their breakfast or lunch.
Don't leave us. Don't leave us.
Don't go away. Don't start surfing, excuse me, the internet. And I hate to say it, but you have to do this. And it's, do I have a really concrete business plan? Heck no. But do I know where I'm going? Absolutely. And I kind of now have my fun little binder and all my tabs on there, and that's kind of my business plan. So anybody that starts a business knows that you're supposed to have a business plan, and that word, those two words, business plan, I think scare off about 99% of our listeners.
Right.
And it's kind of a foreign concept, and it's a little scary, but there's some guidelines that can help you. And if you break it down, we won't even call it a business plan.
Right.
We'll call it your entrepreneurial journey, if that makes sense. So what's the first thing you think you should do, Carrie?
Well, I was going to say in the beginning when I kept hearing, but I would read books about, you know, business, and I would say business plan, business plan, business plan, and a lot of them are geared toward other types of businesses. So I've gone through and tweaked and done things that are for art type businesses. So this is a great guideline, and I'm going to follow. I don't have one yet, but I've done the research now, so I'm going to do this. But first you need to draft your mission statement, which is, you know, going to help you with your elevator speech. And the mission statement should consist of a few concise sentences that convey exactly what you plan to achieve through your art-based business. And that's as simple as it. What do you want to do?
Yeah, so it's not like a 3-page single space type document.
No.
It is, what do you want to do this year? What is your mission statement?
In fact, most successful business plans should be under, like, one page.
Yeah.
Like a resume, one page.
Or it could be one sentence, if it's more than what you have now, which is nothing. You know what I mean?
Line that your whole business plan should be one page. Your mission statement is a
you
know, small part of that. So it's not a huge, huge, you know, project.
Yeah. So if you're – then what you do is you take your mission statement and you kind of have to tailor it to your – with business goals. So let's say if you want to focus on creating, you know, affordable art pieces to sell at some boutique-y style retail stores, put this in your mission statement. And you can include a few phrases about the themes you want to explore with your work, you know, whatever it may be. So if you want to start teaching workshops, okay, that's a great thing that should be in your mission statement, then you need to start thinking about putting some business goals to attach to those.
Right, and you need to describe your product or your art. Your artist business plan should have a clear idea of the art or product you wish to sell, which goes back to the focus, focus, focus. Whether it's hand-thrown pottery, large-scale prints, original oils, watercolors, you know, doing workshops with those, just describe it. Sometimes just writing that down, you'll be surprised, you know, what you come up with when you describe what you do.
And can I just say that your business plan, if it changes tomorrow, that's fine?
Right.
So many people, including me, had these goals for the whole year, and I'd cross them off as I would do them, and there'd be three that I never got to, and I realized it's because I never wanted to do them, and I realized that halfway through the year. So just because you put this little business plan together doesn't mean it can't change. And as you go through this process, it'll probably change because you may think you want to do something, and then when you kind of decide, well, does it make sense? And you have to kind of do a little, I hate to use this, these two words, but market research. You kind of got to do your homework and figure out that, okay, if I do want to sell my art, or let's say I want to approach, let's say one of my goals was to sell my art in a local retail outlet here in South Pasadena. One of those could be a furniture store, for example. We'll have to do a little research. Are there any furniture stores in the area? If there are, okay, there's five. So you can just kind of take your goal, your big goal, and narrow it down. You may want to understand within your market, you know, is your art price such that with your goals, it's a good market for you to sell your art? I mean, if your paintings are selling for $20,000, small retail shops certainly don't make sense. You'd more likely have success in galleries. So you just need to do some research, kind of understand what other artists are out there and what they're doing in your area. I learned so much from what other artists are doing that I think that's a huge benefit of doing a little bit of research.
Right, and that doing that research, you can determine where you want to sell your product. You know, maybe Daily Paintworks is where you think you're best, you know, suited.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a gallery that's better suited, you know, or maybe there's a boutique. But you really need to just, you know, you can't, like you were saying, if you're trying to sell something for $20,000, I don't think Daily Paintworks is going to be your best option.
Very, very true. Right. And so you've got to think about marketing. You know, how are you going to sell your work? How are you going to get the word out? And, you know, what kind of image do you want to display? Where are you going to advertise? You know, maybe it doesn't make sense to advertise in some of the traditional magazines because the cost is so prohibitive. But it's all about kind of figuring out and looking at what your market is, and that's just where you can sell your art, and kind of honing and fine-tuning and kind of just going through this thought process is going to bring a lot of new ideas. So it's really important to kind of just go through it. Maybe you do it every couple months and revisit it.
Right, because it's a test period, really. You're testing these things out. Maybe they're not going to work. Like you were saying, this is a constant evolving thing. So if you put something, you know, if you're trying something for, I would give it more than a month. You know, I'd give it a few months, up to 6 months, I think. And if it's just not working, maybe you need to reevaluate and say, let me try this. You know,
yeah.
It's your business. It's you're the one growing this. So you can make those decisions. I'm going to switch gears now and try this. So,
The other thing you have to do, other than this business plan, which I know we lost half our audience on, and this is where everyone's going to stop tuning, is putting together kind of like a little budget. And
now we really lost them.
They're gone. So it's you and me, Carrie. But seriously, and I do this for my consultations. I have the artist say, okay, figure out, because you probably don't know, how much money did you make last year? And what do you want to do next year? Just pick a number, because you got to pick something. And so you need to not only come up with, hey, this is what I'd like to sell, because you know what? It's just a target. And if you double it, awesome. If you don't reach it, fine. Figure out how to do it next year. But the other thing you got to do is look at your expenses and think, okay, and a lot of artists have no idea how much money they're spending on their art because it's kind of a hobby, and they just, you know, spend money. But you have to look at workshop expenses and everything else and make sure that what you're doing makes sense. It's kind of like knowledge is the key. And if you know that you're spending $5,000 a year on workshops, that's great. And if you're happy with that, wonderful. But if you didn't realize it and then you realize how much money you're spending, maybe that doesn't make sense. Or maybe you're not spending enough. So there's just a lot of ways. And having a budget, and maybe it's just a budget goal, but it's really important.
Right, and it's important to just identify those sources of income because, you know, last year I had a workshop for the first time. That was a whole new source of income that I hadn't thought about that would be coming in. And so, so think about those things in the future, like, oh, okay, you know, if you know you're going to try to do a workshop for me, I'm trying to do like two a year, you know, then really, you know, add that in and you know, try to start thinking about those kind of things. And, you know, maybe you're going to start teaching classes. There are ways that you can generate income besides just selling your art.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree. And that has changed for me dramatically with teaching and doing webinars and some other things. It's kind of fun. And I'm actually going to start a Monday Night Studio. where I'm going to open up my studio on Monday nights. I say Monday nights. It's probably going to start at 3 o'clock. but it's just going to be a place where artists can come in that are local and paint with me, and I'll help them, but I'm going to paint too, and it's just going to be kind of fun. So I'm really excited.
Now I have to move to California.
So we're almost done talking about business plans, so hopefully some of our listeners are coming back to the show. But you want to, once you kind of go through this whole process, you do need to set some short-term and long-term goals. And it's just kind of figuring out, what do I want to have happen this year, and how do I want to reach them? And they may be, you know, you may be going through and saying, gosh, I always wanted to teach, but realistically, I know it's not going to happen now. That's fine, but maybe there's some steps you need to do to get there. So maybe this year you're going to research workshops. You're going to figure out, go through all the workshops you've taken, decide what you like, what you don't like. Perhaps this year you're going to have a free workshop with artists where you're going to invite artists in with you and you're going to practice. Maybe that's what you get done this year. Who knows? So it's just about understanding where you want to go with your business with that kind of entrepreneurial spirit of having fun in the meantime. So, okay, so no matter how much time you spend perfecting the plan, you have to adapt according to ground realities. So it's really stay flexible and adapt as new information comes available. So regardless of what your plan is, be flexible and make sure that you change it if your interests change. And that's a good thing to happen, not a bad thing.
Right. Or if those workshops start happening or classes, you know, anything like that starts happening, just, okay, be flexible.
Exactly.
You know, let it be a fluid plan so you can keep growing with it. Now, the number six tip is successful entrepreneurs, they all have one thing in common. They have mentors, coaches, or masterminds. As a small business owner, we are the boss. No one's telling us what to do. There's no performance review at the end of the quarter, but that might be a good thing to do to yourself. Make your own performance review. You get to make all of the decisions all of the time. So if you've been running the show for any amount of time, you know that this statement can evoke a couple of very contrasting reactions. Some days these words are music to your ears and they're wonderful. It's free and you can do what you want, make your own schedule. And some days they are burdensome because you think, really, do I have to figure everything out? I say that every time I have to do a computer, anything that comes up on the computer, I'm like, you might not want to, you know, you might not want someone else to tell you what to do, but it might be nice to have someone else's perspective other than your spouse once in a while. So that's so true.
So you kind of need a, you know, a coach or someone to help you along. And if you think about who could be your coach, I mean, there are professional people out there, but you know me, I'm way too cheap. And I would think, let's see who you can find within your existing framework. You know, a business coach could be your spouse. Don't know if I would go there.
Right.
Not sure if I want to open that door. But don't get me wrong. My husband gives me brilliant ideas.
Sure.
But a business coach has to be someone who's kind of not involved in your daily grind of your business and who is able to kind of look at the bigger picture and help you out. It could be another artist. It could be a good friend who's not an artist. It could be someone who you know who's running a very successful business, and even though they have a totally different product than you, they can help you out. You can help them out. You can give them free art for helping you out, whatever it may be. So you just need someone that you can kind of bounce things off and kind of give you ideas, someone that you can go to and say, hey, I'm having this problem, or gosh, I don't know what to do here. The other thing is we only have so many skills as an individual. We may know our weakness is, who knows, marketing. It could be the business, the accounting side of it, whatever it may be. Remember that you need to get people who have complementary skills involved in what you're doing. And that just may be a mentor group. Maybe it's a networking group. Who knows? But the thing is, don't think you have to go alone in doing this. Because somebody said to me yesterday in my workshop, I think being an artist sounds like it's really lonely. I mean, you kind of do it by yourself, and I'm like, heck yeah, and that's the biggest problem I had with this as a chosen profession for me is I need people.
Right.
And so surround yourself with people who, you know, maybe are the smartest people you know and figure out a way to get them involved in helping make you be more successful. And, you know, you want to find people who are not necessarily like you, but are good at what they do. And they can help you with what you can't do. And it's really important. They always say the best manager is the one that hires people who complement the skills they don't have. And anytime you can do that, put a little mentoring, artist mentoring group together. And if you're with, if you're in a group of artists, perhaps you all have the same need, bring somebody in who's an accountant. I don't know. Just figure out a way to get people in to help you make your business more successful.
Right. And a good way to do that is a lot of areas have mastermind groups. And, you know, you probably, some people may want to know what a mastermind group is. It's a small group of people that meet for the purpose of reinforcing growth and success while offering support to one another. And these are actually a lot of times professional groups where you have monthly meetings or weekly meetings. You can do a Google search and see if there's anything in your area. And it may not even be art, but some kind of business that might be closely related. I know in Little Rock there's a really large mastermind group on interior design. I went to school for that, so that intrigues me. But I think you could learn a lot from a group like that. And I know in a lot of areas they'll even have free groups where they have monthly meetings, you know, just on for small business owners that attend breakfast or whatever and, you know, learn from each other. And my mom, who has a framing shop, she actually, you know, met potential clients that way because you're meeting a whole bunch of different people with a lot of different businesses and everybody has needs, like we were saying. And so, you know, those complementary skills, they may help you in one way and maybe you've got something that they need. So it can be a very beneficial thing to not only network but also grow from.
I completely agree. I'm kind of thinking I want to start a group of all the AHA co-hosts. You guys can help me with my show ideas and stuff.
I'm in.
I would love that. I'm going to do that for sure. And I'm going to do it on Facebook. If you haven't set up a group on Facebook, you need to do it. And all it is it's a private group that you invite individuals to be part of, and then you can talk and comment and post, and it's just a great way. And if I was going to do, you know, some kind of what we just talked about, I would definitely do it through Facebook as a private group. Because it's kind of easy. So, okay, number 7 is to give back and pay it forward. And I've talked about this enough on the AHA show, but you kind of really need to look at your business and ask yourself the question, how can I help my audience be more successful at what they're doing? So before you write a blog post, before you send out a newsletter or create a video, stop for a minute and ask and think, what does my audience need from me right now? And don't look at it as if I want to sell, but kind of figure out a way to fill someone else's cup rather than your own. And I'm not kidding. If you go out and help another artist, it will come back to you so many times. Don't do it just for that reason. Do it because you care and you want to help. And I think if we all did that, if all 9,510 people that listened to the show last week did that, we can make a huge impact on the art community. I really, truly believe that.
Right. And I, you know, for example, have been doing a Friday feature for almost
you have.
Years on my blog, and I feature other artists. And I started it purely out of, I was just curious about other artists, where they came from, because you see this great work, but you don't know their story. And just like the AHA interviews, you can learn so much. And now it's just become this great thing, and I've met so many friends and so many opportunities have come out of it that I never, you know, would have even guessed. But it was all out of a good, pure place, not a, I want to, you know, what can this get me? It's just been great. And, if, you know, so make sure you do these things when you're blogging, when you're doing your newsletters, especially your newsletters. Keep people interested and give them some information so that they keep coming back to you, because I have a lot of people every Friday aren't going to miss a Friday feature. Share your knowledge and make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the time you get to success, lots of people have helped you along the way, and you need to stop and remember that. When we're successful, we draw so much from our communities and the society that we live in that we should kind of think in terms of how we can help others in return. Sometimes it's just a matter of being kind to people. Other times it's offering a sympathetic ear or a kind word. But really, it's our responsibility, I think, to do good things with the resources that we have available. And, you know, anytime you can help a fellow artist, you're going to help yourself, because knowing that you've helped that artist is what it's all about. So it's kind of how AHA was built, and that's why it's called Artists Helping Artists, because that's what we want to do. And I tell you, for me, I get so much enjoyment just doing the 30 and 30 challenge and being able to see all those artists' art on my blog and seeing what they're doing is amazing. And I've had so many awesome emails from people saying, I used to get 5 hits on my blog. Now I'm getting over 100. I can't believe how much this is helping me get out there. That's so cool. I think that's fantastic. So
everybody feels connected, like you're all part of one big team. It's really great.
So think about ways you can do it, because you can do something every day. I truly believe that.
And our number 8 tip is to enjoy the journey. Everyone will teach you to focus on the goals, but successful people focus on the journey and celebrate the milestones along the way. They do that in addition. Is it worth spending a large part of your life trying to reach your destination if you're not enjoying the entire time? So even if you don't get to your destination, make sure you are enjoying the process. What is the point if you're not enjoying it?
I don't know if I want to get to the destination.
I
just want to be on the journey.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think I ever would. But I don't want to. I just want to keep heading in that direction as it changes over time, because the journey is so much fun. The next thing you need to do is remember success comes from hard work. This is so basic, but you know, if you're going to be out there and you're going to be painting and you want to sell your art, it is hard work. I will be the first person to tell you that. And I don't sleep a lot, and there's a lot of stuff you have to do. You don't need to do it all in one day. You've got lots of time. So that's kind of why being organized and having this plan, realizing you're going to enjoy the journey. You know, successful entrepreneurs always give 100% of their efforts to everything they do. And I think most artists I know do that. They work so hard. But just remember, if you're doing this full-time or part-time, it's still a business. And, you know, you can and should be successful. So,
right. And I think, especially now with the economy not being the strongest, it's easy to use that as an excuse. But we have to realize that someone out there is being successful, and people are buying art, and why shouldn't it be you? Embrace your fears about not being successful, and, you know, so what if you have the worst-case scenario? Like we said earlier, we're enjoying the journey. You're still the same person, and, you know, take those risks, and why not be the successful one? And, you know, like we were talking about the hard work, I had an epiphany a while ago, like, why do some people make it and some people not make it? And, you know, sure, luck is part of it, but a lot of time it's just being the one that showed up and that stayed and persevered and kept working hard and put those hours in and just stuck with it. And that is what makes them successful.
And, you know, that it kind of leads into our next topic, which is be flexible but persistent. So, you know, you have to continuously learn and adapt as new information becomes available, but at the same time, you have to remain persistent, and you got to make sure that you're remembering what direction you're trying to go into. So if you really want to be able to teach workshops by the end of the year, you need to keep yourself in line and make sure that that's what you want to do, and be persistent, but also be flexible. So it's kind of that little faint voice inside of you, and you kind of get those little early warning signals that maybe you're going off track. You got to listen to yourself and realize that successful entrepreneurs find the balance between listening to that voice and staying persistent and driving for success. So trust your instincts. It's kind of that female intuition thing. So when I start to get that little ding, 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 I know, okay, I got to be flexible here, but I need to stay on track.
Right. And part of staying on track brings us to our number 11. Negative people can bring you down.
Oh, boy, I could talk about this all day.
I know. So I found a great quote. It was actually in the Forbes one by Katrina Gissett, and it said, "Do not let the naysayers and dream stealers turn your dreams into a nightmare. There are so many people that will tell you no, you can't do this. If you're surrounded by those who do, when it's time, then it's time to make friends, new friends."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really true. You have to stay positive. And my workshops are so about being in that happy state of life. And it's really funny. I told a story yesterday that I don't think I've ever had a naysayer in one of my workshops. And it's kind of because that kind of attitude isn't allowed. And it's not that I would ever say that to a single person, but it's just It's all about being really positive, really wanting to learn, and really wanting to be successful. And if you kind of have that attitude, the negative stuff kind of doesn't show up. And there have been times with this radio program where I've gotten emails that have made me cry because people, a few of them, have been so mean, whether I say one particular word all the time and it drives them crazy, whether I laugh too much and they can't stand it. Who knows? But people do feel like it's their right to send me a really mean email and complain for a free radio show, whatever. I won't get started. But you know what? So you can tell them how much it bothers me, too. But you have to just say, come on, seriously, whatever. You know, and it's really important to kind of keep the negativity out of what you're doing. And I think it's really important. And we actually even have a few kind of tips to help you cope with the negativism, because it's there. And whether it's in your own head or coming from somebody else, you got to figure a way to keep it out of your art studio, especially.
Right. One of the things you can do is just mentally remove yourself from the negativity. Imagine taking a pair of scissors. We're all visual, right? So visualize taking a pair of scissors and cutting that cord that links you to them. Their negative thoughts cannot interfere with your positive ones. I think that's great. I've never visualized that, but I think that's really great.
And you can also find something to love about them. You know, it's nothing squelches negativity faster than love. It's so true. So try to find something positive about the person, even in the midst of complaining or whatever, and share that positive something with them. And, you know, I am the first to if there's things being negative, I'll try to make it positive. And if it doesn't work, then I don't like to be surrounded by negativity. I'm a very, very positive person. So it's tough, but you can do it.
Yeah, and you just have to make that decision and realize you can be positive no matter what. And if you believe that someone can pull you down, they will be able to do that. So it doesn't have to be that way, and you can just say, nope, I'm going to be the positive one, and I'm going to be positive at all times.
Yeah, and it's just taking the high road. That's all it is. And don't dwell on the negative. It's so simple, and you can just stay in a positive place. And this goes with other people and what's going on in your mind when you're in your studio and that painting's not working. You have to be able to take yourself out of that negative state. Maybe it means going in the house, making lunch, vacuuming the floors, whatever, to get yourself out of that state of mind and going back in and saying, oh, gosh, this is just a silly painting. I know what I need to do. And being positive. So it's really important.
Isn't that the truth? We can be the most negative out of
you
everybody.
You think?
Yeah, so I think that visualization might come in handy there. Just say, cut that part. Nope.
No, I agree.
Not doing that today.
I agree.
So our number 12 tip is core values last, quick buck artists don't. Are you being your authentic self? Is your wallet dictating your art over your passion? And you really need to think about that, because I've heard people saying, well, that's not going to sell here, so I'm going to try this, and I don't know, maybe this would sell. So make lists about what you love about yourself and your art and what brings you passion and joy, and make a list of those qualities and be the artist that you wrote about. Does your mission statement or your elevator speech reflect the art you're doing?
You know, it's really difficult, because there's that premise that gosh, if you paint what you think is going to sell, you're selling out. And but then there's the mortgage payment that gets in the way. And there is a fine line there between painting what you love and painting what you love that might sell. And this could be a whole show. It could be 10 shows on this program. But it's important to understand where that fine line is. And when you cross it, you need to get back. There's nothing wrong with painting things that you think are going to sell, as long as you're painting for yourself and you're painting your passion. What you don't want to do is cross that line so far that you've kind of lost your core values and you're looking for the quick buck. Because I think that's when things start to kind of get messy and don't work. So you kind of need to align your heart with where you're going and make sure that the direction you're taking is understanding and in the direction of what you're passionate about. As long as you do that, you're fine.
Right. And I think the way I look at it is I could you could get commissions for portraits and pets. All, you know, a lot of times that's what people are wanting, and I could paint those, but they make me so nervous and so upset that it's not worth it. So you have to just decide what you're willing to do and where your heart is. And you need to let go of others' expectations and let go of, you know, worry for your future and just simply be in the moment and showing up as your true self and, you know, make sure that you are enjoying that journey and you like that process.
And that's when we always come up with our best artwork.
Right.
It just works that way. It's a simple fact. If you are passionate and you're happy, you most every time will create your best art.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to recognize that. Okay, we are almost done. Number 13 is test plus action equals success. And you need to take small and medium risks consistently. But you have to test your results and focus on what works. Taking action will make you feel alive. It's where you personally grow. And that's a great quote by Justin Crane. So we all need to take risks. Right, Carrie?
Right, right. Yes, and taking risks can be hard, but they're necessary, and the need for security is one of the things that keep us from taking those risks.
Mm-hmm.
We have a need as human beings to want to stick to what's familiar and predictable, and we like things that we can control and know well.
Yeah, and anything you ever do in life is going to be risky. I mean, you know, you could look at it negative and say when you go to school, you risk failing exams, or when you get married, you risk failing divorce. I certainly hope you wouldn't look at it that way. But when you drive, you risk becoming involved in an accident. So the very nature of life requires risk-taking every day. So you have to recognize that. And so it's okay to take risk in your art because, my gosh, had I not gotten married, I wouldn't have an amazing husband and three incredible children. So, duh.
Right.
You got to be able to push yourself forward.
Right. And it's important to take intelligent risks. Imagine all things that could possibly go wrong when you're making a decision on whether or not to take a risk. The trick is then to put all the measures into place that can prevent those things from happening. But be careful not to want to be a perfectionist in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot possibly prepare for every outcome. You need to have some faith in yourself and the fact that you'll be able to handle whatever comes your way.
Yeah, and you need to take action. So the longer you procrastinate, the higher the likelihood that you won't do something. So, you know, action is important for self-confidence to develop. With every small success, you'll be learning to take bigger and better risks. And I've always said, I'll take risks. I throw things up out there and see what sticks on the wall. But I'm gonna take risks that aren't going to have a huge negative consequence, if at all
right.
possible. I look at, instead of saying taking a risk, I look at it as trying new opportunities. And it's the same thing. It's just, you know it. It's just got that spin, so I think it helps. But, you know, you got to do them. You got to try different things. So.
And I thought number 14 was great because all the time you hear people talking about balance and they want to have balance. And so I thought this was almost a light bulb moment when I was researching this. It said, rather than focus on a work-life separation, focus on work-life integration.
That's me, yeah.
Yeah, so it's so important because in my life, for example, I've heard lots of stories about people that either waited until their kids had grown to start becoming an artist or they did it while they, you know, became an artist while their kids were young. I've heard both sides of the story, but no matter what, you know, most people said they would have started earlier. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's what they said. But when it comes down to it, you just have to know where you are now and make it work and figure out what works for you. In my case, it's not practical for me to have a studio outside of the house because I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I would never make it there. So I have to figure out how to work with my family around me. And, you know, we joke a lot of times because they all end up sitting in here with me where I paint. And so it's like we have this big house and everybody's in this tiny little room with me, you know. So, but,
shocking.
You know, you just have to make it work and figure out how you can integrate all of those together.
Well, what you have to do is you got to look at you and try to understand your behavior and based on how you work, come up with the plan. So you have to figure out how do you manage your family work life. I get emails all the time from artists saying, can you do a show on how you can be an artist and have small children or babies or, you know, kids in sports? And we all kind of have that. So you need to understand how you manage your family work life. So do you tend to blend your personal and your work tasks? If so, you might be an integrator. And there's two types of integrators. The first is a work firster. And a work firster allows work to interrupt family. A family firster allows family to interrupt work, which is very interesting. You know, you might be what's called a separator, and where you tend to keep the tasks separated into, you know, defined blocks of time. So you may be, if you're a separator, you get your kids on, you walk them to school, as soon as you get home, you do your art, and the second you go pick them up, that work is done, and it's all about your kids. You may be the kind of person who tries to do both, and there's no right or wrong, but you just have to understand how you can do it. So you can be what's called a cycler, and that's where you switch back and forth between highly integrating your family and your work. Maybe then there's times where you separate them. None of these are good or bad. I mean, they're all great, but just understand how you work and accept it, and based on how you work, come up with a plan on how you can get family and work to work together really well. And understand there is no wrong way of doing it.
Right. In my life, I realize I'm not very creative in the morning, and sometimes I try to make myself because kids are in school or something like that, and I'm like, oh, I've got this chunk of time, and it just doesn't work. So I end up getting nothing done because I'm not looking at how I operate. Mm-hmm. So get some other things done. Maybe I can get my bookkeeping done, shipping stuff out, you know, running around. Those kind of things I'm fine with doing in the morning. I know myself. I'm not going to be super creative until, you know, later in the evening. So, you know, sometimes, yes, you have to force yourself to, you know, work where you work with what you're doing, and maybe you don't have the option to, you know, do it at midnight because you got to take kids to school in the morning. But, you know, just realize that it can prohibit you from getting things done if you don't realize how you operate and kind of change how you do things a little bit to make it better. All you're trying to do is be more effective in how you get things done.
Mm-hmm. It's so true, and my life has changed dramatically. I'm an empty nester. Well, me and my husband, we have no children. That's why we got a puppy, which is a whole nother story.
Child.
Not sure what I was thinking on Christmas Eve, but anyway. And so I have these kids who aren't here, but I want them to be part of my business. So I reach out to them and say, hey, how can I do this online? Or Andrew, my oldest son, helped me a ton with webinars this last summer, because I didn't know how I could create a video, put it online, but you could only see it on my private blog. I didn't know how to do that. I said, Andrew, help me figure this out. And thought he was helping his mom. He loved it.
Aww.
And so I pull my kids into my business and my husband into my business for help. And I love that. I don't want to be a separator, if you will. So there's just ways, you know, that you can make it work for what is best for you. And I think it's really important to stop and think, how do I work best? How do I want to make this family and work life integrate in the best way possible? So, okay, we have two more points. And this one, because we're artists, we know what it is. It's use rejection to your advantage. We are in the art world, and it happens. It's not fun, but it's a fact of life. And it's important to accept it and realize that every artist out there deals with rejection. So you're not alone. It's part of it. And you know what? It's okay. A lot of times it has nothing to do with you. And I will remind everyone that. It's so true.
Right. And sometimes it's just about timing.
One time
I heard Rosie O'Donnell said something that really changed the way I thought. They were asking, you know, as she was coming up as a comedian, if she ever got mad when other people, you know, would rise faster than she did, or, you know, achieved fame before she did. And she said, no, she said it never, ever once did she think of it. Was she ever jealous for that person? She just thought it wasn't her turn yet.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point it would be her turn. And that's really changed how I look at things. So if you get a rejection letter in the mail, I'm thinking it wasn't my turn. It was somebody else's turn. And I'll keep working, and it will be my turn eventually, you know, to get into that. So you have to keep positive, just like we talked earlier. You've got to give yourself credit for taking those risks and realize that the art world is subjective. Art is subjective. Judges are subjective. Think about what is good, and that, you know, good things will happen.
So an art entrepreneur uses rejection to their advantage. I mean, it's a chance to consider if there's something you can work on. It's okay to think about whether there's room for improvement, or if your goals were higher than your skills. So remember, okay, something negative happens. someone takes a workshop from you and they don't have a good experience. Okay, then you want to stop and think, what could I have done differently? What, given that scenario, what is it that can be better? You do an art show and you don't sell a lot of art. That's, you may look at that as rejection, but you also have to figure out what were some of the external things going on, what could happen. Obviously, I think most of the time in this topic we're referring to entering an art show and maybe not getting in. Those are the things that you have to look and see. What, you know, so you paint very loosely, and the judge was a realist painter. Think about it. So it's just a chance to consider that you can take a rejection and turn it into a huge positive.
Right, and sometimes I think our expectations maybe are not where they should be. Maybe, you know, you mm-hmm. can't expect tomorrow that you're going to be on the cover of Artist Magazine when you've only been painting 5 minutes. You know, there are people that have been painting their entire lives, you know, that aren't on Artist Magazine, you know, on the cover. So, you know, don't set yourself up either, you know, for rejection.
Yeah,
and
you're so right.
Yeah, and your skill, you know, make sure maybe your skills weren't strong enough this time. Maybe you need to work, you know, on your technique, your studies, whatever it takes to get accepted the next time. Use rejection as an opportunity for self-improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it, you know, rejection's a hard reality check, but you have to approach it right, and it may nudge you in a direction that you didn't know you would go into. And sometimes we kind of take on things that are a long shot, and if it doesn't happen, that's fine. Hey, at least you tried. So,
right.
And now we're down to our last tip on becoming an art entrepreneur.
And this may be the most important one of them all, and that's expand your mind forever.
Mm-hmm.
Never stop learning. Take that workshop you always wanted to. Get into a live model drawing class. Get out and go to the museums. Read art books, magazines. Keep learning. Just keep challenging yourself. Commit yourself to being a student for life and in pursuit of knowledge. And it's one of the smartest investments you will ever make.
I couldn't agree with you more. What a great show. This is very inspiring. I tell you, there's sometimes we just have to stop and think a little bit because I think most artists, almost every artist out there is already an art entrepreneur, if you will.
Right.
But
right.
But it could be that, you know, with these 16 different points, there's a couple that maybe we've kind of ignored on purpose and they need a little bit of attention. But it's really just about thinking outside of the box. And one of my favorite things to do is if I see something that someone's done that is totally un-art related, but I think it's a great idea, I will rack my brain trying to figure out how can I apply that same principle to my art business? What can I do? And it's often some of the most successful things I've done. So just kind of keep looking out there all the time. And if you see what you think is a great idea, think, could I do that for my art business? Because if we don't look outside the art world, I think we're selling ourselves short. And that entrepreneurial spirit is something that makes this job for me so much fun, even though it's a job.
And don't overwhelm yourself with everything. You know, you could go back and just pick one of these things today.
Oh, of course.
Say, this month I'm going to try to, you know, work on those contacts, or I'm going to get that business plan written. Just pick one thing and just whittle it down, you know, until you finally, you know, eventually you've got it all in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Fun. Okay, so we'll talk next week once I figure out what the show's going to be.
I know.
But I am off this wild train ride. Life is starting to become more normal, and I just need to go out to my studio and paint my painting for tomorrow.
Yes. Can't wait to see what you do.
Yeah, me neither. Listen, thanks, everyone. Thank you so much for your support of the show, and have a fantastic week. Take care, Carrie.
You too. Bye.
Bye.